presented by DogNation.com in partnership with the AJC. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Talked a lot on Monday about the aftermath of the loss to Georgia Tech and kind of where Georgia goes from here and what the evaluation you're going to make of first-year coach Kirby Smart, the overall status of the program. And it was really interesting to hear your feedback to me about the show from yesterday and what your fellow Georgia fans are saying in the comment section there at DogNation.com. And it's one of those areas in which there's just not a lot of agreement right now. You've got some Georgia fans who are really upset with the coaching staff and the fact that 7-5 at Georgia is never good enough. I have to admit, you know, while I'm optimistic about the future of Smart, I'm probably in that camp a little bit as well, that this was not a successful first season. When you have a number of losses that a Georgia program is just not very used to, you know, I think that would cause you to be a little concerned about where the potential future of this program is going. Some of you think that evaluation is too harsh, and you're certainly free to express your opinion on that. It's been good to hear from you on that. So while there's some disagreement in kind of where things stand now and where things are headed for the future, the one thing, though, I do think everyone seems to be able to agree on, though, is what the path towards that better future is. And it's obviously recruiting, and it's obviously going to kind of culminate with February's National Signing Day. And the great news here is for Georgia fans who are kind of united around that idea, Kirby Smart also seems to understand that as well. Because after the game on Saturday, even in the midst of talking about all the negativity of the loss to Georgia Tech, Kirby did give a bit of a preview of his plan for improving this team and how he's going to use the next few weeks in recruiting to see that that happens. He gave us a little bit of a checklist of exactly what he's looking to see done here.
Obviously, the offensive line is a big area for us to try to improve. We try to target that area. And, you know, we try to have a diverse class filled with good players where it's not overloaded one way or the other. So we want to have a balanced, good, healthy class, size class. We've got to get bigger. We've got to get bigger at some positions where we're not. You know, secondary is one we hope to get a little bit bigger and get more physical. The recruiting will be the emphasis for the next really 14 days as it's a contact period.
We've talked about the offensive line a lot before. We'll do that some with Jeff Sintel here in a few minutes, so I'll put that aside for now. I want to focus in on the other issue that Kirby Smart brings up there, which is the defensive secondary. Because obviously defensive secondary would have helped Georgia a lot this season, especially on Saturday against Georgia Tech. And, you know, in the midst of kind of describing the loss and how things went poorly against the Jackets, Kirby talked about the Georgia defense and the fact that at one point in time, hey, things weren't going too well. Then the game kind of ebbed and flowed. Now Georgia was having some success stopping the Jackets' offense. And then at the end, it kind of all fell apart again. And in the midst of describing all this, Kirby kind of paints a little bit of a bleak picture about exactly what happened, which does speak to that defensive secondary need for Georgia. Here's Kirby from Saturday.
Momentum and some of the passes. I mean, I'll be honest with you. When they're a run-first team. We all know that. So we got to stop the run. The minute you stop being able to stop the run, that's when it really opens up the floodgates. And we had that, you know, early the first drive. They were doing some unique things. They did a good job offensively doing some different schemes. We adjusted to it. But at the end of the day, we weren't able to control the vertical passing game, the deep balls, as well as we wanted to. Certainly every one of those plays we repped and worked on, but we didn't stop them when we had to. We got to give our kids a better opportunity to be able to stop those.
So when you're a coach talking about your team's inability to stop your opponent's passing attack, and the opponent in which you are discussing is Georgia Tech, that means you've got a real problem because, as everyone knows, Georgia Tech is just not a potent passing offense usually. But when it really mattered on Saturday, they were able to do that against Georgia. So getting better in the defensive secondary, having guys who are capable of winning those one-on-one battles when the front seven is all sold out to stop the run, yeah, that's going to be a clear need for improvement for Georgia going forward. It's why one of those names you're going to hear so much over the next few weeks is a guy like D'Angelo Gibbs, four-star safety from Grayson High School, who is 6'2" and 204 pounds. He's the kind of guy that looks like a Kirby Smart player. He's not undersized as a defensive back. He's able to be physical and tough and win the kind of battles that you got to win if you want to have more than seven regular season victories the way that Georgia did in 2016. And it's also on a side of the ball that I think really matters for Georgia going forward. Now, pretty clearly, there's some key offensive questions that have to be answered here in this offseason. We're going to do our part to address those here on Dog Nation Daily and really pay attention to what Georgia's doing to fix those needs. But let's be honest here for a moment. Kirby Smart is a defensive-minded head coach. So as we look for his identity, his plan for Georgia to fully take shape over the next few weeks, really the next few seasons, if all things go well, we know that's primarily going to be led by defense. Georgia as a program is going to be known for something. Now, this season, I don't think it had much of an identity really in any form, fashion whatsoever. But going forward, if Georgia's going to get better, it's going to have to develop an identity. And it just makes sense that identity would be on the defensive side of the ball. And work has already been done along the defensive line. Trent Thompson, one of the best defensive tackles in America, he'll be back in 2017. The freshmen who played this season, including Julian Rochester, already very good, only expect to get better for their sophomore seasons. But as Kirby Smart just said there, the missing piece for that Georgia defense right now, probably more than anything else, is the improvement in the secondary. And the specific measurable aspect of that improvement is going to be in the size. So pay attention to that. What Jeff Sintel writes at DogNation.com, for what we talk about here on Dog Nation Daily, are the kinds of defensive backs Georgia brings in this class. Are they bigger? Are they stronger? Are they more capable of helping Georgia win the kind of one-on-one battles that lost on Saturday against Georgia Tech? Those are the kinds of questions, as they're answered affirmatively, will put Georgia in a position to be ready to be more competitive in 2017. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're going to talk a lot of recruiting here over the next few weeks, getting really excited about the signing day time of year, as you know our listeners are very aware of. This is just as much fun as any of the games that get played during the season, and for Georgia, probably even more important, because it's the work done here going to really matter as Georgia tries to right the wrongs of 2016 and get ready to compete for championships in 2017, 2018, and beyond. And as we cover all that, we'll remind you the Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by B-Dry Waterproofing and Foundation Repair, your expert in basement and crawl space waterproofing solutions since 1958. You can call 404-417-5531. That's 404-417-5531, and B-Dry can give you a dry home forever. Before I bring on Jeff Sintel here to talk a little more recruiting with him, I'll also remind you there are just 332 days between now and the cocktail party in Jacksonville next October, as Georgia looks to get its revenge on the Florida Gators and really send a message that the work that has been done in recruiting leading up for Kirby Smart's first two signing classes, it has led to improvement on the field. And the best way to measure and display that improvement on the field is beating a hated rival like the Florida Gators. And we hope to see that happen next October. That's why we're counting down the days between now and then. Now, speaking of recruiting and speaking of Jeff Sintel, who's about to join us, really interesting conversation with him where we'll get into a lot of the key issues facing Georgia. I just talked about defense, so I'll keep most of my interview with Jeff focused on defense right now, including a big-time potential flip that Georgia could get from another SEC school here between now and signing day. Jeff's written about that. He'll talk about that. A big-time head-to-head battle that Georgia's going to try to win with not just one but two of the biggest programs in all of college football, and a potential freshman that could step right on the field and start right away with the Georgia Bulldogs defensively. It's a lot to get into with Jeff Sintel. He's written about all of it at DogNation.com. He'll give us more information right now on Dog Nation Daily. It's great to have you with us on the program today.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we'll say hello to Jeff Sintel, talk a little recruiting with him as that heats up here over the course of the next couple of weeks. And, you know, Jeff, we talked about this a lot on Dog Nation Daily yesterday, talked about it some today, that, and I know you even wrote about this yourself, when, you know, Georgia goes 7-5, loses to the in-state rival Georgia Tech to finish the season, really the only way to make people feel better about that is to have a big run of recruiting here over the next few weeks, get a big-time commitment or two, and, you know, really set the stage for a big signing day in 2017. That's the only way to wash this sour taste out of people's mouth, right?
That's a good way to put it. Sour taste, bee sting, whatever you want to call it, Brandon. I'll throw the appropriate college metaphor out there when maybe people have had too many Coca-Colas on a late night around town, and they wake up and they say, I never want to feel that way again. Well, the only way for Georgia and Dog Nation to never feel that way again is to sign a bunch of tremendous elite recruits for 2017, and that's exactly what they're on the path to doing right now.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to talk about some of these guys because I think you've done something really fun at DogNation.com over the last couple of days. You've looked at your latest projection. It's almost like a mock draft, but for a recruiting signing list. Here comes signing day, and you did the offense on Monday. You've got the defense, your projections on defense for the class of 2017 up today at DogNation.com. And we'll probably end up spending most of our conversation today on the defensive side of the ball because I think there are a lot of interesting names that you kind of throw in the mix there. I guess the first one I want to ask you about is the fact that you are still projecting Aubrey Solomon, the defensive tackle from South Georgia, to be a part of Georgia's 2017 signing class. And that's good news, I think, for a lot of Georgia fans. But, Jeff, isn't it also fair to add to this that the competition for Solomon between now and February is certainly going to be intense, right?
You got it, Brandon. And I think you kind of short-sold it a little bit by saying the competition between now and February. That might best be described as a competition between now and April.
Good point.
Perhaps. And, you know, I think with Aubrey, it was funny. With the defensive guys, he was the first guy. I just went position by position from the nose of the football out. And he was the first guy I projected. And he's still my number one guy, the most important remaining recruit for Georgia in 2017. Just because defensive tackles are rare, they're special. And Aubrey would be a special defensive tackle in any year. His high school teammate Chris Barnes is there. He knows Tyler Clark well. He knows Trenton Thompson well. But this is a young man whose decision will be complicated. If I had to say, if we're driving the length of the field, much like Georgia Tech did to beat Georgia last Saturday, if this is a 96-yard drive to get Aubrey Solomon, I'd say, man, we probably aren't even at midfield yet for his decision. I think the things that work in Georgia's favor, there's two things. Number one, he's already taken the official to Alabama, loved it. He loved everything about that visit. And he's also already taken the official visit to Michigan. He loved that visit. So those are, especially the Michigan trip, it's going to be really hard to get back up there multiple times, at least as many times as he could take two more trips to Georgia because he still has the official visit to Georgia left. And I get the feeling it's almost like, I think it's like the school that leaves the last great impression on Aubrey Solomon will be the school that gets him. And I just think there's more chances for Georgia left on the table to make great impressions with Aubrey Solomon compared to any other school.
Another name that shows up in your projections for the class of 2017 on defense is Trey Bishop, who Georgia would use as a defensive back. And boy, you know, this really speaks to something that we've talked about here, whether it be the Papa John's postgame show or here on Dog Nation Daily, that need for fireworks, that need to kind of go out and take somebody else's commitment. For a guy like Bishop who's committed to Auburn, that is an example of that, right? If Kirby Smart in Georgia can wrest away this young man who's been an Auburn commitment now for quite some time, that is an example of the kind of flexing of muscles that Dog fans hope to see from this program before signing day arrives.
I think that's a good point, Brandon. I would look at Mr. Bishop as kind of David Marshall 2.0 or the sequel. That is a in-state Georgia kid who's pretty close to maybe close enough to Auburn as close as they are to Auburn as they is to Georgia. And I think a lot of the lure for Trey Bishop was maybe, hey, I can do some things at quarterback for Auburn and also on offense as a receiver for Auburn. The one thing I just keep coming back to with Trey is it's pretty simple. I say this a lot. I follow the visits. And since Trey committed to Auburn, he has had more visits to Georgia than he has taken to Auburn. And he still has an official visit left to take to Georgia as well. So I just really think that Bishop, he knows the guys in 2017 at Georgia really well. He's being talked to by, you know, Kevin Shearer, his lead recruiter, and Mel Tucker and Kirby Smart quite a lot. He seems to enjoy himself at Georgia. And I really think that eventually all those things are going to win out for Georgia because he told me a while back, I think he really sees when he really looked at his future, he said the best chance of him making a considerable living playing football professionally, that would be on Sundays, of course, would be at the safety spot, would be at the defensive back spot. And he's big, he's long, and he's fast. And I think maybe the best place, along with that home state feel, the best place for him there to do that would be at Georgia.
playing for Kirby Smart on that defense.
Another name that you had mentioned, and Jeff, I got to tell you, I don't really feel like that Georgia fans talk about this guy enough. You've got Leonard Warner, the linebacker from Brookwood, as a part of this 2017 class for Georgia. And that's a young man that I find myself incredibly intrigued by because his size, because he's apparently a very smart guy. He's had, you know, some academic institutions interested in him. He's been interested in some of those, what we think of as, you know, academic-type schools. To me, Warner really has an interesting profile as a player, and I think that would be a big addition to this class if he does join up here. And, you know, I hope to see him get a lot more attention from Georgia fans in the weeks ahead, because I think Leonard Warner, you know, based on what I think I know about, you know, Kirby Smart's kind of prototypical desire from linebackers, it seems like Warner fits that bill pretty well.
He does, and I think he could adapt to maybe inside or outside linebacker. I think he could follow in the footsteps of the other Brookwood linebacker that wore number 35 at Georgia, Rennie Caron. And I really think Warner is a guy that could be a team leader, could make the defensive calls really fast because he's really bright, could go to Stanford, could go to Georgia Tech. And I really think that he's endearing himself to Georgia right now. He wants to take an official visit to Stanford before he has enough data in his sample size to make his decision. And that should come sometime before the dead period. But, you know, the thing there with that story, Brandon, is I want people to notice the big picture a lot. And I really strive for depth when I write about these young men. But in that one, I had 15 names to kind of mini profile really fast. And I had to kind of do it like Jerry Tarkanian style. The one thing I hope people, and for any young podcast listeners out there, you should feel ashamed for not knowing who Jerry Tarkanian is, and you should probably go chew on a wet towel right now and figure it out with Google. But, you know, the thing I would say there is, like, Georgia, like, I know the Monday projections on offense was kind of like ho-hum, and that's because I only see Georgia adding about two more guys likely on offense, whereas the bulk of the class, they've got 16 guys committed, and I think they're going to get 11 more guys to get to 27. And I have nine of those guys coming on the defensive side of the ball. And those are nine names maybe you've heard before, a couple of new names, but I think that's where Georgia is going to really make its mark on the back half, the back 2 months of its class. You know, guys like D'Angelo Gibbs, guys like Aubrey Solomon, guys like Leonard Warner. And it also becomes a notion to me that there's true depth in this class where I'm sitting there thinking a lot of guys could play early. Folks, you're going to see Georgia change so much over the next year and a half, maybe 18 months from what they are now. They're going to add on. They're going to add on so much size and weight and pounds and mass on the interior of the offensive line, the tackle spots, the wide receiver spots, the linebacker spots. Everywhere you look, they're going to get bigger and longer, and they're going to maintain their speed and perhaps get a little bit faster with really at least playmakers. Georgia's going to upgrade its pass rush. You made the comment yesterday on our SEC Country Facebook Live, Brandon, when we were talking about Alabama and Florida, and maybe the reason why Alabama and Florida continue to make that SEC championship game every year. It's because they rush the passer and they affect the passer better than any other defenses in the conference. And Georgia's going to get a lot more of that. But there's so much depth coming in that guys like Jaden Hunter, guys like William Poole III, even some very astute fans out there, I think kind of tend to take them for granted in what they could be for Georgia because their eyes are on the prize of all these other new names that are contested out there. So, you know, it's just a really strong class. I keep saying often that, you know, Georgia has the habit of ripping off those top 10 recruiting classes. Well, this one is different. This will be Georgia's best recruiting class in a decade, and it will be, by all accounts, a very strong, eventually the third best recruiting class in the country. And the last time Rick did that, the year was 2006.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Very well said, Jeff. Along those lines, the defensive back that's been in the fold for a while now is Richard LeCount. He was the first commitment for the class of 2017 for Kirby Smart in Georgia. The guy that Georgia still wants, though, is D'Angelo Gibbs, who, as you report and write about at DogNation.com, is choosing between Georgia and Alabama right now. If we assume that Gibbs is going to play defensive back in college, how would you compare the skill set of LeCount to Gibbs? How close is Gibbs to being a Richard LeCount? Is there some space, some distance between those two guys as players? What would you compare the sort of player profile of LeCount to Gibbs in relation to?
I think you're going to see a lot of comparisons to maybe the Seattle Seahawks and their Legion of Boom. You've got one guy that's like the Earl Thomas guy, and then you've got another guy that's like the Cam Chancellor guy. The flashy, instinctive, you know, Ed Reed-type ball hawk, that guy's going to be LeCount. And then maybe your do-everything physical coverage, bull-type safety is going to be Gibbs. I think Gibbs is 6'2", 205, and LeCount is scratching at 5'11", and about 185. These guys are extremely competitive, instinctive, and I just think you want to talk about the back end of Georgia's defense. If you're able to get LeCount and Gibbs to Athens, and they both enroll early, I mean, they're going to take somebody's jobs and take it fast. I think Dominic Sanders, if he stays at Georgia, which he should, his job is going to be safe because he's going to go down as one of the program's top defensive backs of all time, especially in the takeaway department. But you're going to have guys like LeCount and even eventually Bishop and Gibbs. They're all going to push current guys like, you know, Aaron Davis is of the world and, you know, the current guys they have there. And the other thing Georgia is going to have is they're going to have a lot of cross-train guys where they can just kind of quickly shift them from position to position. I think both LeCount and Gibbs could play, come down and play that slot corner spot right there and everything else. So you've really got a lot of guys that can do a lot of things, because what Georgia wants right now is a lot of adaptable players that can play multiple positions, that can stay on the field. So when anybody goes tempo, that Georgia is not really kind of got their hand behind their back a little bit with, you know, having guys out of position.
We'll talk more about offense later on in the week, but there is one offensive name I want to ask you about here before we say goodbye. It's a guy that you wrote about on Monday, kind of a new name in terms of DogNation.com. That's DeMarcus Hayes, the junior college offensive lineman. Now, we've long assumed that Georgia would have to reach into either the graduate transfer ranks or the JUCO ranks for an offensive lineman next season because of how thin Georgia still is going to be at that position, with a lot of true freshmen being added and guys that haven't played, like Ben Cleveland, you know, Solomon Kenley, guys like that next year. So what can you tell us about Hayes here in terms of what his value could be for Georgia?
Well, he's a guy, they need a veteran body. He's about 6'6", about 320. Really sought after. I think Louisville, Auburn, those kind of schools are all in the mix because everybody wants that guy that they can drop in and play. And to me, Brandon, a chief advantage for the JUCO guy is just maturity. It's the example of a 21-year-old kid, a 20-year-old kid versus an 18-year-old kid. They've got a lot more groceries in their stomach. They've got a lot more weight they've lifted, and they've got a lot more life experience and maturity to them. And, you know, Mr. Hayes, he's kind of like my most likely JUCO guy right now. Georgia's going to look at some other guys, but he's matched up very well with a guy that's on his own team there in Mississippi, at the junior college in Mississippi. By the name of Isaiah Buggs. And Isaiah Buggs is probably the country's best junior college defensive tackle, defensive lineman. Alabama's after him. Auburn's after him. Everybody's after him. And so he's been through those battles in practice every day. He knows what an SEC elite defensive trench monster looks like. And, you know, he's just used to it. And he's coming in with a purpose. I think he'll have 3 years to play two. And his coaches are high on him. Mississippi State is also after him. The delicious irony I would like to see, Brandon, is what happens if, because he's a junior college guy, and he's going to sign somewhere in mid-December. And I just wonder what Georgia would feel like in maybe, you know, the pie in the sky metaphor there with a guy like Walker Little. I think they would rather have Little than Hayes, but I don't think they'll have Little by anyone's account.
cooked and in the fold by that time, I still think it would be a major upset if Georgia could pull in Little. So they might end up taking an extra body just to cover their bases, like a DeMarcus Hayes. They've had some other junior college linemen that they're looking at right now. But to me, what would be interesting is, I think, you know, one of the things I projected with that class is I think they're going to be right around 27 or 28 guys, depending on attrition, depending on which Bulldogs declare early entry for the draft. So that leaves a guy like, okay, if they have to take an extra offensive lineman to just kind of be cagey with it, you know, where's a guy that might not stay in the class? And I pointed to Lanier linebacker Tyler Taylor. He's an inside linebacker who I projected in my last mock class for Georgia, that I just don't feel the Bulldogs are keeping up the pace with, like, an Oklahoma State, an Oklahoma, and an Auburn, those other schools that seem to want Taylor a lot more than Georgia does right now. So I keep coming back to something Taylor has told me once, and members of his family continue to tell me, is if Georgia recruited Taylor as hard as everyone else is, then he'd likely already be committed. So that's a pretty big tell for me right now that, you know, Tyler Taylor is one of a glut of inside linebacker types that Georgia is chasing right now, but he's probably not the priority. So he's a guy, another in-state guy, another guy at Lanier High School that folks maybe might see him in another jersey. Not really because of skill and ability here, but just kind of because of the numbers game at work here.
Yeah, that's a really good point. But I also want to go back to something you just said a moment ago, too, because I think you touched on something that's really important here. We'll make this our last exchange. You talked about if you could get a Walker Little, which I know, and you know, you've cautioned me every time I bring up his name, that's still a massive long shot. But if you could get one of those, I'm talking about top-shelf elite offensive linemen, then I think Georgia fans should be fine with not adding a junior college offensive lineman because you've got the better overall talent, even if he is a younger guy. But if you can't pull the trigger on one of those big-time five-star linemen to add to what you already have, Jeff, at a minimum, I think Georgia has to have a junior college lineman, whether it be, you know, Hayes, the guy that you wrote about, or somebody else of that type. I think Georgia would have to have a junior college offensive lineman just to be competitive next season because, you know, I thought you said it well with Andrew Thomas on Monday. He may be ready to start at right tackle halfway through the 2017 season, but probably not a day one starter like Greg Little was at Ole Miss. So, you know, at some point during the summer next season, Georgia's going to have to try to address who are its starting offensive tackles, and you can't look to freshmen to fill both those roles necessarily, at least not right at the beginning of the season. So if you don't bring in a five-star Walker Little, then you've probably got to have a junior college just to have enough guys to start next season.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is, you know, we keep talking about where are the tackles. My earliest projections on who are Georgia's tackles for the opener against Appalachian State is I got to have Isaiah Wynn in there, I think, with any sort of credibility, because he's the guy that slid over when Tyler Catalina was felled a couple of times in some moments, some key moments this year. So, you know, I think he's a guy right there, Isaiah Wynn, to think about there. But, you know, we keep talking about Walker Little, and I think your crusade for Mr. Little is only rivaled by the Gator hater stuff that you continue to share with all of our loyal listeners. And, you know, so I was trying to think about a new way I could talk to you about Little. And I think Little is a guy that, you know, maybe 2 weeks ago you were like the high school junior thinking he was going to go out with the homecoming queen, but that's the college homecoming queen at Georgia.
Right, right.
And now I think I've relegated it to you're just a high school junior that thinks you're going to go out with the high school homecoming queen for you, you know, there in Forsyth, Georgia, in the coming area or something like that. So, you know, hey, you got that deep voice, you got that baritone, you got a way with words. So let's hope that the Georgia coaches that are recruiting Walker Little down the stretch here also have that same mastery of the English language that you do.
Without a doubt, Jeff, that's what every Georgia fan's hoping. And listen, you know how our audience is, your readers, listeners to Dog Nation Daily. This time of year is just as much fun as any game Georgia plays during the fall. It is going to be a great lead up to the signing day 2017. And as you mentioned before, maybe even beyond that with Aubrey Solomon and who knows else, it's going to be so much fun on DogNation.com. We appreciate you being here with us today on Dog Nation Daily, and we'll look forward to a lot of fun from you over the course of the next few days.
Hey man, looks like a busy December coming up for Dog Nation, and I know on my list
I'm going to ask Santa for some sleep underneath the tree because I know I'm going to be needing it sometime around mid-December. So, hey, guys, have yourself a good weekend. Kind of stay dry out there in Atlanta for one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, good stuff there from Jeff Sintel. Love the work that he's doing this time of year, and he's got a lot planned here the next few days. So make sure you're sticking close to DogNation.com. Jeff will have it all for you there. Just really going to be on top of everything happening before now and signing day. Forgot to mention this earlier in the show, but at the end of the show today, I'll talk about the possibility of Georgia playing Miami in a bowl game. I'll kind of give you some of my thoughts on that. I'll be curious to hear yours as well. And, of course, you can always reach out to me on Twitter, at DogNationDaily, or just drop a comment there in the comment section. I read those, respond to as many of them as I can, and just have a good time, sort of that two-way conversation we're able to have about the show. Before we get to the Mark Richt and the Georgia stuff and the bowl game, though, let me do the SEC through here. It's brought to you by SECCountry.com. We'll talk about some of the big things happening around the Southeastern Conference. And obviously here on this Tuesday, the big news is, once again, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee releasing the top 25 again tonight. And I guess from the SEC standpoint, really three issues to deal with. First of all, we know Alabama's going to be number one overall, and we'll kind of see what happens underneath the Crimson Tide in terms of the most likely, you know, playoff contenders. As we've touched on a lot, that debate between Ohio State and Penn State, it's the kind of thing you don't have to care about either one of those two schools. You don't have to care about the Big Ten to really have an opinion on that debate. By every number, every metric, Ohio State is the better team on paper than Penn State. The unfortunate part of that argument is the two teams played and Penn State won. Beat the Buckeyes. Penn State has a chance to win the Big Ten. Ohio State's not going to. So if you could only take one of those two teams in the College Football Playoff, would you take Ohio State? Would you take Penn State? Now, that is the debate that's going to be raging. Now, Georgia fans, SEC fans are sort of irritated because the big conversation in college football is happening a long way away from the epicenter of SEC country, the epicenter of Dog Nation. But nonetheless, you know, underneath Alabama, that's the real interesting discussion point tonight. You probably won't see much change with that this evening because Penn State hasn't won the Big Ten yet. But they did beat Michigan State on Saturday, so we'll see if they inch in any way closer to Ohio State with these rankings being released tonight. And as I said, I think yesterday about Alabama, the one concern I think you have to have about the Crimson Tide is the fact that this team has just not played a close game in a while. So if the Tide gets into the College Football Playoff, playing an Ohio State or a Clemson, Washington, anybody else, you know, are they going to be ready for that game given the fact that played Auburn, the banged-up quarterback, Florida really not healthy enough on Saturday to provide much of a threat against the Crimson Tide? It's been a lot of that recently for Alabama where they have just, you know, with the exception of the LSU game, which was probably close for three quarters, they just really haven't been tested. And I don't know that you want to go to the College Football Playoff having not been tested in a while. So we'll kind of see if anything on that scenario changed for Alabama, and if what we normally think of as the rigorous SEC schedule, the fact that it's been relatively easy for Alabama this season, if that poses a problem for the Crimson Tide looking for another national championship. Another big question from an SEC standpoint tonight with the College Football Playoff rankings is, who is going to go to the Sugar Bowl? As you know, the highest-ranked non-playoff team from the SEC gets that Sugar Bowl spot. The problem is there aren't going to be all that many SEC teams who are even ranked tonight. And the ones that were ranked last week all lost. Florida lost, Auburn lost, Tennessee lost. So what happens here? My assumption is that Auburn will probably remain the highest-ranked non-playoff SEC team. Even with the loss to Alabama, I don't think that changes. The only real threat to Auburn here would appear to be LSU, which beat Texas A&M pretty badly on Thanksgiving night. But everybody's been beating Texas A&M of late, so I don't know how much credit you want to give LSU for that spot. What this ultimately comes down to is not one of these blind taste tests where all of a sudden somebody's going to say, oh my gosh, look at that, SEC Team X is rated ahead of SEC Team Y. I guess that means that's the one that's going to the Sugar Bowl. You guys know that's not the way this sport works. I mean, I hate to be so cynical, but you know the Sugar Bowl is going to get its pick of the team that it wants, and that's what the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is going to then ordain as the team that's the highest ranked. So who should the Sugar Bowl want? Should it want LSU? Should it want Auburn? Now, forget here for a moment the fact that Baton Rouge is close to New Orleans, which might affect tourism dollars and things like that. For a moment, let's put that aside. Let's look at just the two teams here. Who is most deserving the Sugar Bowl? Well, I know Georgia fans don't like Auburn or LSU, so they probably don't really care. But if I'm in a, you know, be an objective journalist, so to speak, and an objective evaluator of this situation, I do think LSU has not had as good a season as Auburn. I do think Auburn's season, based on the fact that it beat LSU, based on the fact that it just seems like it's had more good moments this year, I think it is Auburn that's probably more deserving of the Sugar Bowl nod here. But certainly I am, like many of you, not going to shed any tears if it's the Tigers not getting a chance, or I should say the Auburn Tigers not getting a chance to go to that game, that coveted New Year's Bowl game. And then you also are left to kind of wonder here just how many SEC teams truly are even ranked tonight. Tennessee, after losing to Vanderbilt, they were ranked, I think, 17th last week. Do the Vols fall all the way out of the rankings tonight? It's certainly a possibility. I mean, you could end up with a lot fewer SEC teams ranked at the end of this thing this season than I think many of us would have ever thought was possible. Other SEC stories that I want to get to, and these are sort of tangibly related to Georgia here. Jeremy Pruitt, last year's Georgia defensive coordinator, now at Alabama. He is a Broyles Award finalist for the work that he's done with the Crimson Tide defense, and I'm not surprised by this, and I think you ought to get some credit. Some people are going to say, well, he's just taken over what Kirby Smart did, and he's working on Nick Saban's staff. That's an easy defense to be a coordinator for. Anytime a defense is as good as the one that Alabama's is this season, I don't care how much talent it has, you got to give that coordinator some of the credit. I thought that Pruitt was a great DC here at Georgia, and he's pretty clearly doing great work there at Alabama. And I think it's a real shame that, you know, somehow, some way, if Mark Richt hadn't been fired, that Georgia was not going to be able to tolerate Jeremy Pruitt, the edge that his personality, so many people seem to have such strong dislike for him. Doesn't speak well of Georgia that a guy that won a national championship at Florida State is having nothing but defensive success at Alabama somehow was rubbing people the wrong way at Georgia. If he was rubbing folks the wrong way in Athens, it's the other people who have a problem and not Jeremy Pruitt. Now, I'm not telling you I'd want to live next door to him. He's probably kind of an abrasive guy. But pretty clearly, from a coaching standpoint, he knows what he's doing, and he's the kind of guy that's upwardly mobile in getting things done. And Georgia needs a lot more of that, not looking to eject guys like that from the program. Maybe it all works out in the long run with Kirby Smart and his staff here now, but the way that things were going for Georgia in 2015 was not overall a very good look for the program. The other thing that I want to mention about these Broyles Award finalists who were announced, this is the award for the top assistant coach in college football. The only offensive coordinator on the list is Matt Canada. Now, you may be wondering, is that an alias? Is that someone's real name? Well, yes, that is Matt Canada. That is a real name. And if you're wondering who that is, he's the offensive coordinator at Pitt. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because his predecessor at Pitt is Georgia's current offensive coordinator, Jim Chaney. So a year after Chaney leaves Pitt, his replacement is apparently one of the best assistant coaches in America. The numbers here speak for themselves. Chaney last year at Pitt had the 38th best offense in America, according to the offense efficiency metrics from Bill Connolly over at Football Outsiders and Football Study Hall. Canada this season improved that number all the way to 23rd. Now, first of all, 38's not that bad, but 23rd's a big improvement. So for the folks who are saying, hey, Chaney's not doing as well at Georgia as he probably could, here's some ammunition for you in that his replacement at Pitt is doing better than Chaney was. But the overall story for Chaney is probably a little bit more complicated than that, because, you know, as bad as Chaney's been at Georgia this season, just 92nd in the country in that same metric, I think you have to reasonably ask yourself a question. Could a guy like Chaney, with less talent at Pittsburgh, really produce a better offense than the one that he produced here at Georgia in 2016? And it's way, way better, 92nd compared to 38th. So I think what this tells you is, yeah, his replacement at Pitt's doing pretty well. But overall, the track record for Chaney over the long term as a coordinator has been better than it was for Georgia here in 2016. My assumption in that regard then is, at some point in time, Chaney is going to be a little bit better as an offensive coordinator than he was this season. But I've heard from so many of you, I understand that so many of you are not looking forward to having to be patient watching that take place, watching that unfold. I kind of get where you're coming from on that, but the overall numbers speak for themselves. I think at some point in time, Chaney probably ends up being a little bit better than he was this season. But it is hard not to notice, though, when the Broyles Award finalists are announced for the supposed best assistant coaches in college football, the guy that replaced Jim Chaney at Pitt, on the list for having a much better offense there in the ACC than what Chaney was able to put forth last season and his last year working with the Panthers. So we'll see if Chaney is able to get some work done and get that better for Georgia in the long haul, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, I told you I wanted to close out the program by talking about the possibility of Georgia and Miami matching up in a bowl game. And you know, this is something that's been talked about now for quite some time because the fact that obviously the media people who do their bowl projections, anytime they see an SEC-ACC matchup where they think it might fit, that's the kind of thing that's just too juicy not to put together. And Mark Richt, I guess, also kind of was asked about this on a Miami radio show on Monday and admitted that, yeah, that'd probably be the kind of thing that a lot of people would like to see. I guess the next question to ask about is this the kind of thing that Georgia would want? And my assumption is that Georgia probably would not want it. And I think that's probably the right thing for Georgia to do. You know, I don't like the idea of Georgia ducking anyone when it comes to playing a bowl game. But in this particular instance, I don't think it's ducking Mark Richt in Miami. I truly don't think Georgia has anything to gain from playing this game against the Hurricanes right now. And anything that comes out of the game, I think, would potentially only be negative. But if you want to weigh in, you certainly can, and we'll look forward to talking to you tomorrow.